Welcome to The Rest Is History, or The Rest Is History Club, I should say, because, of course, this is our first proper bonus, isn't it, Tom, for club members. We had our episode about clubs, but this is the first one that we're really engaging with people who've already joined up.
Yes, and it's the first one in which we explore what we're meant to be doing. Because the previous one, as you said, was on clubs. I guess most people have listened to that. Generally, they're not going to be on specific themes. We're going to be going through your comments, stuff that you've put up on Discord, you know, general views, thoughts, that kind of stuff. Might discuss a few ideas for future shows that people have suggested, go over comments on past episodes, all that kind of thing. But before we do that, we should flag up this Wednesday.
Yes.
8 o'clock London time.
Yeah.
We will be doing a live show on the 60s.
Yes. So you'll get a link to this, I think, by email, telling you how to log into it. And for those of you who can't make it, you will still be able to access it afterwards. I think that's right, isn't it, Tom? Not true of people who are non-members. So
no,
very exciting.
They do not get it.
We
exclusive.
The muggles of this world. So yeah, you'll get it. And obviously send in your questions about the 60s to the Discord chat room. Now, I have to say, looking at some of the threads, we obviously won't be able to handle all the questions because if there seems far more people have signed up, I think, than we anticipated, which is amazing. But I sometimes look at the threads, you know, the ideas thread, which is brilliant. We'll come to talk about that in a second. But when I started scrolling down the ideas thread, I thought, oh my God, there's like 900 ideas here.
But we're going on till the crack of doom.
Yeah, we will. But if we don't respond to you on Discord straight away, that's why, because we have to record some podcasts as well.
Well, we should also say that there is a kind of, there's Sam, who is working in the background, who's collating all the comments, keeping us up to date with the questions, all that kind of stuff. And he's going to be drawing up a list of everybody's suggestions.
Every idea. He's going to compile a huge database of every idea.
We will be going through it. And we should also say of course, Christmas is coming, and that will slightly snag up the routine. So we're not going to be putting episodes out the week of Christmas. Instead, what we're going to be doing is it's themed around the 12 days of Christmas. And Dominic and I have each nominated an episode in history that happened on one of the 12 days of Christmas. And we'll discuss that.
Yeah. So we'll just be chatting about these moments, won't we?
Yeah. But we need to think of some bonus thing for you listeners. That the muggles won't get.
Yeah. Who knows what that will be. So Tom, let's, to the Discord. So basically when the club was first mooted and Jack, the producer, said there was going to be this chat room called Discord, I have to confess, and I think our members will expect this of me, my heart slightly sank and I thought, oh, I have to pretend to be friendly and all this. And I have been on Discord and have been very friendly, but you are very, you're a rare, you're not as enthusiastic as me. Amazing.
Well, I'm adjusting because I look at it and I see they're kind of, I haven't quite worked out what the format is yet.
Right.
So it's a process of negotiation.
You've been institutionalized by Twitter.
And also, Dominic, you will know that I'm up against a horrible deadline in the form of,
Thomas,
I've got to deliver 40,000 words to my American editor of the new book before Christmas.
Oh my God. You've got to write 40,000 words between then and now.
No, I've got to deliver it in total. So I'm racing against the clock.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons why.
So that's why
And when I'm not doing that, I'm having to read about superheroes.
That's why you didn't sign up to the Rest Is History thread about East Anglian members with your Liam Neeson accent. Because you were too busy writing about the Emperor Vitellius or something.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
It's great, actually, the Discord thing. Because there's the weird thing is I sort of think, it's like one of those things you sort of wind it up and set it off. It's a bit like your brother's podcast where they have clubs where they meet up without your brother even there or Al Murray there. And they have their own kind of separate ecosystem.
But you'll be going to every party, won't you?
You are Mr. Clubbable. Because already they've got like regional Rest Is History groups, which I heartily commend. I mean,
the Mercian one.
Yeah. Well, you're a heptarchy man, aren't you? You think they should bring back the heptarchy. Yeah. So you must love that. You should set up a Western History Wessex.
Okay, so we should read out some comments. So I like Ness's. History TV's loss is theirs. History's gain. Only so much money to spare.
Yeah.
We must keep that from Dan. We mustn't tell Dan that.
Well, I'm obviously going to tell Dan.
And here's a great question from Chris Hind. What are the top things in modern life that are unexpectedly based on Christianity? That's the kind of question we like, isn't it, Dominic?
Have you seen what Sam Mitch Garth replied to that? He said, my favourite history podcast featuring Tom Holland.
Excellent.
Great. I mean, surely this is the only history podcast featuring Tom Holland, isn't it?
Anthony B. Sanders coming here proves once and for all that I'm not a Marxist, as I joined a club that would have me as a member.
Oh, very good.
So you obviously wouldn't approve of Anthony B. Sanders.
Of course, one thing they do miss out on. I do approve of Anthony B. Sanders. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely, I approve of him. One thing they do miss out on is the ads.
Yes.
So Skinino.
Delighted to have been accepted for membership, although I will miss DC Sandbrook's soothing tones on beer. And I love seeing your name as DC Sandbrook.
Do you?
Because as we said right from the beginning, it does make you sound like a character from a Sunday evening cop show.
See, when I actually first published, I wanted to publish as DC Sandbrook because I thought it would make me sound like AJB Taylor or something. But our publishers, because I used to be the same publisher as you, they said, no. You need to humanize yourself.
DC Sandbrook.
But I'll tell you the advert that people will really be gutted. And that is, of course, is it Better Health? The number of people who mention that, you know, the better.
Well, I'm
lying awake at 4 a.m.
wondering whether the next words for my book will ever appear. Well, that is actually rather what I'm feeling at the moment, to be honest. I might sign up to it.
Every time that comes on, like if I'm listening to the podcast in the car or something, and it really makes my day to
are you not listening to the advertless episode then?
I actually enjoy the ads. I like listening to
the A52. Do you know, if I never hear your joke about Tiny Tom again.
I didn't write that. That was Tony who wrote that.
I know. I know. But I try and skip that. So just some other thoughts. Already some questions and helpings out coming through, such as McRobbie's, what was Charlemagne's first language? That's a good question.
What was Charlemagne's first language?
I would guess it was kind of proto-French and proto-German.
Frankish?
No. Well, because he kind of grew up in Gaul. So he probably... Right. But he was surrounded by German speakers. So I'm imagining that he's speaking a kind of Latin-y, proto-French.
The Franks spoke a kind of German, did they?
Yeah. But they're living in Gaul.
But then they became Romanized. And is that how they ended up speaking French?
Yeah, so I would imagine that Charlemagne grew up kind of bilingual in proto-German, proto-French.
It's funny how these sort of quite...
And he spoke Latin?
These questions, I don't want to say a banal question, because they're often quite important questions. They're precisely the kind of questions that like 10-year-olds ask and you don't know the answer. I remember Ted Valance, who came on to talk about Magna Carta.
And will be coming on to talk about the execution of Charles I, won't he?
He will be. He's a great expert on 17th century. And I was once in the pub with him, and I said to him, did Oliver Cromwell wear trousers? And there was a kind of long pause, and I knew that, like, Ted wasn't...
processing that one.
Yeah. And I was like, when did people start wearing trousers? Because that's just kind of... When did they start?
Well, Ali Ansari would answer that, would know that.
Well, he would say yes. But in Britain, I think they started wearing them at the turn of the 19th century. They got rid of breeches. Hmm. So Charles James Fox, what did he wear on his legs?
Breeches, didn't he? Culotte.
And stockings?
Culotte.
Lord Liverpool, I think he wore trousers.
Wasn't he the first to wear trousers?
Yes, I think he was the first Prime Minister to wear trousers. We might have talked about this on
Yes, we did.
Prime Minister.
And he's the only Prime Minister to have a London railway station named after him.
Yeah. But obviously, Dr. Johnson never wore trousers.
No,
he must have worn breeches. Anyway, we're just wittering now.
Yes, we are wittering. So, should we go on to the ideas that people have?
So, the ideas thread, I find that terrifying because that's. I feel like I'm locked into doing the rest is history for the next 50 years. That I'll be sort of CGI. Yeah, beyond the grave, they'll bring me back. Some AI thing will be able to reproduce exactly what I would have said much better than myself.
So, some of these we're definitely talking about, and we should explain that, you know, there are certain topics that require us to do quite a lot of research for them.
Yeah.
And at the moment, because I'm under the cosh, I need to do episodes that I basically know about.
Yeah, there's some episodes that we're just waiting for the right guest, or some that we're timing for anniversaries, or that we just...
Or some that we actually have lined up. So yeah. Ash 132, The American Civil War and Its Legacy. So that's a massive one. That's a biggie. We've been
talking about doing that for months. And I've got a guest in mind who's very good, who is an old friend of mine, who knows all about the origins of the American Civil War and stuff. And I think it's just a question of lining him up when he can do it.
Barry Grogan, it's the 100th anniversary of the Anglo-Irish Treaty, a couple of benign and non-controversial episodes on the island of Ireland.
Well, I would love to do this. And we had there was a guy actually at BBC Northern Ireland who was on to me saying, why aren't you doing something about Northern Ireland? And we did talk
about that, didn't we?
We did, and I really wanted to put it in,
and then I can't remember quite.
And then it fell out again. But I think we should do it as, I'd love to do it as a multi-part, going from the sort of 1880s or something through to the 1920s, maybe even beyond, because there's so many amazing characters in that story, and it's such an interesting story. So yes, we will get around to it, Barry. I can't promise you when, but we will.
Because the problem is, I know very little about that. So,
but it's, you can talk about Christianity.
I can. Well, on that theme, I would very much like to do St. Columba.
Right. Yes, I've heard about that. So I know it's just not one sent in by the listener.
I don't care.
So Ian B says, a run episode on Charles Dickens. Now, we've always talked about doing Dickens.
Well, Ian B, have we got news for you?
Yeah.
Because actually tomorrow, isn't it, Dominic?
When's this going out, Monday? Yeah,
it's going out Monday. Yeah. We're doing a special, hopefully, unless things intervene, on Christmas Carol.
Yes. So definitely Dickens. We're both big Dickens fans. So Dawn Raylione, I think his name is, sent in a suggestion, which then generated a little bit of a thread, which I replied to. He said, an episode or two on FDR, Franklin D. Roosevelt, who's, he says, is criminally underrated in the UK. And actually, Roosevelt is a really interesting case of somebody who is obviously a colossally important figure. I mean, one of that handful of 20th century leaders, Churchill, Stalin, Mao, Hitler, who are kind of titanically important. But of them all, he's the least well-known in Britain. And I would say probably outside America generally. I mean, nobody cares about Franklin D. Roosevelt in Britain, but do they?
Do you know about him?
I do, yeah. I used to teach. One reason I know about that is I used to teach a course on America in the Depression. And the students, most of them, when they started, so these are 18, 19-year-olds, knew nothing at all about Roosevelt. They had no sense
of... he was in a wheelchair.
No, a lot of them didn't even know that. They had, and these aren't uneducated or dim people at all, quite the reverse. But Roosevelt just has no place in the collective imagination. And it's really interesting and odd.
I would guess the first US president to have cut through, though, is Kennedy.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Really. And it must be to do with film, TV.
I think we weren't.
The others, they're still kind of slightly, you know, boring-looking figures on black and white photos.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think British people just simply weren't interested in American affairs as much pre-1960s as they are now. That level of obsession that we have now, where the BBC sent 6,000 people to cover, you know,
yes,
a gubernatorial election or something, that just didn't exist. And Roosevelt also, I mean, the big drama of the Second World War, he's a kind of latecomer.
And yeah, late to the party.
He's late to the party, but also he doesn't seem quite as, you know, such larger-than-life figures in kind of Stalin and Churchill and stuff. And Roosevelt kind of unfairly...
He was a very interesting...
Yes, fascinating figure, really important. Absolutely.
So we'll do him, yeah?
Yeah, of course we will.
Luke, I enjoyed the episode on the Beatles. Why not more on the history of music? I guess because we're not a music podcast. So the music has to be... the people who are doing it have to have a historical significance beyond the significance.
You know what? I would love to do an episode that would have music in it. I would love to do something on Fin de Siècle Vienna.
Yeah, we could do that.
So Klimt, Mahler, all that sort of world. Because somebody mentioned that in Golden Ages, in the feedback to Golden Ages, and they said, why didn't you mention that? And I thought, damn. Because that really is a kind of lost golden age on the kind of that classic.
Well, Mozart also would be.
Yeah, Mozart would be a good subject.
Freemasons and Joseph II and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Probably we will be talking about the Beatles and music more generally in our episode on the 60s. I'm sure we will. Olioko, history and popular culture such as Blackadder. Well, we did do one with Al Murray on comic treatments of history.
We did
talk about Blackadder in that. And actually, we talked about Blackadder with Gary Sheffield in the Western Front.
Over the page we have C. Broken Savage, who I think I met when we talked at Podicon. Imagine you're the Prime Minister. Yes. Which figures from history would be in your cabinet?
I quite like that. That's quite good.
That's a great podcast in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, let's do that. Definitely do that. And Dr. CDF, an episode on the Brezhnev years in the Soviet Union, was there really stagnation? Yeah.
I mean, Tom, I'd love to do something on the late years.
We've got one booked, haven't we, on the fall of the Soviet Union?
Have we?
One of the 12 days of Christmas.
Oh, yes, we are doing that as one of the 12 days of Christmas. That's just the last day. But yes, I'd love to do something on, because to give you a preview of my views, I think Mikhail Gorbachev is one of the most interestingly overestimated.
Oh, the Henry V of Russian history.
Well, Mikhail Gorbachev is a very admirable man, but clearly a terrible leader.
Yeah.
I mean, if the end of your time in power involves your country falling apart and
you being held hostage in a dacha,
into the abyss, then that doesn't speak volumes for your effectiveness as a leader. Anyway, that will probably annoy some people, so we'll move on. Let's talk about past episodes, because what's really fun about this is we can get tons of feedback, people either pointing out where we've gone wrong or asking more questions and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So Napoleon, Nick said it was his favourite episode, Napoleon in Egypt. I'd forgotten just how bonkers and amazing the invasion of Egypt
was. It is a brilliant story, isn't it? I mean, it's such a brilliant story. In itself, just the narrative of it. But then when you throw in all the sense of titanic civilizational clashes and discovery of ancient Egypt, and I mean, it's just a fabulous topic. And I really, really enjoyed doing it.
That was one of those. It's funny, the ones we do, some of the most enjoyable are ones that are neither of our specialism. And we both have to do lots of revision.
Although, you see, I was slightly cheating because I had done quite a lot of work on it.
Had you? Beforehand.
I made a film. About the relationship of France and Islam, which then went to Iraq. So we looked at the Yazidis and everything, and then ended up in with Napoleon. And we had this fabulous. We got up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go and film at the pyramids. Oh, it was a splendid shot of the Great Pyramid and me in silhouette. With the sun coming up behind
us. Two great icons of civilization.
Two great icons. So I enjoyed going back to that and kind of dusting my memory for that.
What's she looking at?
I'm just trying to find the name of the book on Napoleon, because we've also got a question from Zach W. I need more Napoleon in my life. If there was one book to start with, where would you start?
Well, the big new recent biography was Andrew Roberts, wasn't it? Napoleon the Great. I mean, he adores Napoleon. Adam Zamoyski, I think, has a book about Napoleon. So there's a very strange... Tom's had his headphones off, so he doesn't know what I've been saying.
I didn't notice that.
There's a very strange recent book by Ruth Skirr, who's a very talented writer, and she's written about Napoleon and gardening, bizarrely. Have you seen that, Tom?
Yes, I did.
Quite eccentric.
She's a wonderful writer.
Do you have a
great
book
on John Aubrey.
All right. Yeah. Two good books.
You never quite know what she's going to write. Always, always really wonderful. The book I was looking at was Paul Strathern, which is called Napoleon in Egypt.
Yeah.
And it's the book to read if you want to know more about this subject. Neanderthals.
Yeah. Joey McCarthy.
Joey McCarthy. That's
I thought Tom's impression was fantastic. What will he do next? And can we have another rendition?
I'm a Neanderthal. I'm going to go and hunt a mammoth.
What really made me laugh was somebody on Twitter put up the clip that the BBC did. Did you see that?
I did.
Some years ago.
It sounded very similar.
Somebody really tried to do the Neanderthal voice.
Because you have to hunch your shoulders.
You do. You have
don't
to.
Like that.
Is there something to do with the weight of their head or something?
Something
push
like that,
it down and they...
Yeah, I didn't think it was as good as mine, I'll be honest.
Didn't you?
No. And James Jones, does this count as history if you find ancient history too heavy on sources and not vague and speculative enough? Studying Neanderthal seems the place to go. I did think that.
You know what? Actually, though, you could argue, couldn't you, that Neanderthals is almost purer because you're not
getting it muddled up by...
But muddled by invented sources.
Yeah.
I mean, you're dealing with... When we had Chris Stringer, what struck me was he was so judicious. But also, there's nothing kind of getting in the way. You're just studying bones and trying to tease out meanings and stuff.
Well,
it's not like you've got some fantastic legend that's basically you know, it's not like some Suetonius the 12 Caesars, yeah. which is basically distracting yeah. you by telling you a lot of lies.
Well, the lies themselves, of course, are the stuff of history.
Of course they are.
Blah, 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 blah. But Becky Wright Rag Sykes, whose book Kindred I opened the show
Yes, she
with,
did.
She just won, that just won the Hessel Tiltman Prize for History.
Yeah.
So it must be history. And it's, you know, yeah. the Hessel Tiltman Prize for History is a very, very distinguished prize.
I think
prize
some quite dodgy books have won that prize there.
There's some very good books have won that prize, I can tell you. So that's definitely history. Rasputin? Yeah, okay, so Dominic, this is you.
Yeah, I literally let myself down.
Very surprised that there was no mention of Tom Baker's superbly overacted performance in Nicholas and Alexandra from 1971. I'm sure it would have influenced Boney M. Yeah, so why did you leave that out? You're a big Doctor Who fan, Tom Baker's
Doctor
Who.
Yeah, I knew about it.
What was
going
on?
I think because I was very keen that the Rasputin one, I was incredibly keen that we strip away the kind of mythology. And Tom Baker obviously gives a scenery devouring performance.
The part he was born to play, really.
Yeah. I think it's actually one of the parts that got him the part of the Fourth Doctor.
Yeah.
Doctor Who. The producers had seen him as Rasputin. And he is very funny as Rasputin and very kind of charismatic. I mean, funny, unintentionally funny, and kind of charismatic. Would it have influenced Boney M? I don't know. Were Boney M watching BBC costume dramas?
Know.
Is it a BBC costume drama? I'm not sure. Now, the Kingfish, this is a very cleverly worded response from the Kingfish, because at first you're like, oh, we don't want you in the club. He says, this episode was deeply disappointing for me. And then he goes on to say, because it was thoroughly enjoyable and informative.
I hope
that's
the problem. I hope that listeners are paying attention to that.
Yeah.
That's the master craft from the Kingfish on how to
get a
message read out.
Exactly. That's the problem. I want to believe that Rasputin was impossible to kill, well endowed, and showed it off. Mm. Well, I mean, that's what everyone wants to hear with Rasputin, isn't it? And it was interesting, actually, from the questions, that all the questions that we got, so we got, I don't know how many questions before the episode, 200 questions or something, they all were from people who thought that the Boney M version basically was real, or assumed there was a lot
of
truth.
No, I don't think they did. No, I think that, you know, obviously, you know, was he really love as Russia's greatest love machine?
All the stuff about really his pickled penis.
Yeah, it's the pickled penis, perhaps. But I think it was... it was just tribute to the way that actually Boney M's song, more than anything else, is clearly what influences how people see him.
Yeah,
I mean, certainly in
true.
My case. And yeah. I can't, you know, I can't think of a song that has more radically influenced how people see
history.
You know, a figure in history.
Waterloo?
Not really. Because Napoleon didn't surrender there, did
Wuthering
he?
Heights, Kate Bush.
Well, there's Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark.
In Enola Gay.
Two classic songs on
Joan
of Arc.
She did
Joan
of Arc, of course. Yeah.
But not
so
influential in the same way. I thought amazing. But if you guys out there, if you're listening to this and you have any thoughts on famous people from history, episodes from history that have been influenced by a rock song, pop song, disco song, whatever, let us have it.
So then we have clubs and we have cricket. So Claire, so one thing our producer Tony said to me is... because I used a picture of a working men's club on Twitter to advertise it. And he said, you didn't mention working men's clubs at all. And he's right, actually. Working men's clubs are a really interesting kind of mainly 20th century phenomenon, kind of gone into massive decline. They went really into decline in the 70s and 80s. And actually, we did just talk about aristocratic clubs. But I don't know, is a working man's club the sort of model that we want for the rest of history club, Tom?
Well, I don't know. People sitting around in mufflers.
Have you ever been to a working man's club?
Stout. No, I haven't.
I have.
Have you?
Do you know who I once saw?
Do you know, Dominic? That's the difference between us, isn't it? I hang out in St. James's.
But that's true. You hang out in Brooks's. But I went to a working men's club in Sheffield. Do you know who I saw there?
Spandau Ballet.
Jimmy Carr.
Oh, goodness.
Before he was famous.
Wow. Was he good?
Well, Jimmy Carr's, how shall I say? He's kind of a divisive figure, I think, these days. But I have to say, in this environment, and it was in Sheffield...
So comedian, you should explain.
Yeah, it's a comedian, stand-up comedian, quite sort of close to the Bow material. He was there in his suit, and he was quite young, and he looked very incongruous with all these sort of men in the Sheffield Working Men's Club. And he had them eating out of the palm of his hand. He was very self-confident, very funny. And I sort of thought, gosh, you know, he will go far, and he did. That's not technically history, is it? So we should probably...
No. A question from Claire J. Did women ever have exclusive clubs?
Yeah.
They did. They did.
And they still do.
So Alexandra's was the famous one.
Is that right? What's the story of Alexandra's?
She was married to the future Edward VII.
Yeah.
And this club was, I think you had to have been eligible to be a debutante. So you'd be right. presented to the Queen. So it was all about breeding and background. But it was only for women. And one day the Prince of Wales came to try and get his wife to go somewhere or something. And he was refused entry by the doorman because he was a man.
Wow.
And so the club came to be known as Alexandra's as a result of that.
And there are still women's clubs in London.
Yeah. And I think several have been set up quite recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, is the answer to that. Obviously, it's a much Ian more male
B,
thing.
Is there any difference between a society and a club, or are the two terms interchangeable? I think they are similar, but not the same. I think a club, as I think I responded to Ian on Discord, I think a club has a greater sense of exclusivity and of kind of like-minded people coming together and applying. I think a society is slightly different, don't you, Tom? A society feels like it's more public than a club,
yeah,
I think.
I think so, yes. And it's not physically based either. It doesn't have to be physically based.
Whereas I'm a member of the Just William Society.
Are you?
Yeah. Fans of Just William.
Do you kind of meet up with...
No, well, I think they do have meetups. They do have meetups, but and my son and I are both members because he read about it and wanted to join.
That's very nice.
So we did join because he loves... I'd love to do a podcast about Just William.
I'm happy to do that. But I love Just William as well. And on the topic of literary topics, yeah. Anthony B. Sanders, I think the Inklings would have made for good mention, although they went to club in the strict sense.
He's quite right.
I mean, you've actually got an article about Tolkien out today as we're recording it.
Yeah, on Unheard. So, our friends at Unheard.
Yes, although you neglected to mention the most important aspect of Tolkien.
I can't mention everything, Tom. At least some of these trivial aspects of Tolkien.
Like his Catholicism.
Yeah.
But we are going to do one on Tolkien.
Definitely. So we're sort of, not that I'm giving the game away, but I think we're pretty much thinking we'll do Tolkien roughly when the Amazon Lord of the Rings series
comes out, aren't we?
Yeah, it's next. So towards the sort of end of 2022. But we've been thinking about doing Tolkien, I think, since the very first...
That's right.
Meeting we ever had about doing a podcast at all.
Or maybe even before that when we met up to watch the whole of The Lord of the Rings.
That's right.
Which we did years ago. AJ Black, was there a straight line between these original aristocratic clubs and the establishment of football clubs? That seems a really obvious link that isn't at all obvious from the outside. I mean, I don't think so. The link is with cricket. So aristocratic clubs definitely fed into the Marylebone Cricket Club.
But also aristocratic, I suppose you could say the link is maybe public schools. So public schoolboys who would have been members of clubs were also key in setting up football clubs. There was a lot of comment, wasn't there, online about sort of linking the two podcasts, something like AC Milan, which is started, I think, as a cricket club, didn't it?
Yes. The football was a football and a cricket club.
Football and a cricket club. Again, classic, you know, sort of British aristocratic types doing business in Milan and so on. So there is a sort of link between those two podcasts. Okay, history of cricket. Close to your heart, Tom.
But touching on both of those, if one thinks of, you know, a football club like Aston Villa, founded very, very early, I think maybe 3 years before Wolverhampton Wanderers, perhaps.
When's Villa founded? 1870s?
1872,
3? Yeah, Wolves is 1877.
1874, Villa. That's founded by the cricket club that it's a Wesleyan chapel that has a cricket team. And they found the football club.
Yeah.
And that's obviously not aristocratic in any way.
But it's obvious at that point that there wasn't really, the sort of slightly, I mean, to some people, perhaps slightly tiresome kind of cultural and class connotations of football and cricket, which we obviously play up for mildly comic effect on the podcast.
In
the 1870s, they didn't exist. People played both, and would
they
have seen.
They still do.
Yeah, of course they do. I mean, Dan Jackson,
Gary Lineker,
Dan Jackson, you know, online,
very, very good batsman. Both of them played for Scunthorpe.
He did. And Dan Jackson online in this context posted a clip on Twitter. I think he might have taken himself or somebody, some other Newcastle fan took, which is, I think.
Yeah, it's Stokes winning, hitting
it's
the
winning Stokes run. In the Ashes, is it?
Yeah, or something? Ashes, yeah.
And it's the fans at St. James's Park, Newcastle fans, so all in their kind of black and white shirts, their celebrations when the winning run is struck, which would make you think, you know, well, that idea of a sort of schism between football and cricket doesn't really stand up.
The Charltons and Steve Harmison came from the same mining village. So, yeah, it's kind of an interesting topic. Claire J, really enjoyed today's episode. Poor David Steele. So he's the bank manager who went to war. He, grey hair, glasses.
That's right.
I mean, imagine playing cricket if you've got grey hair and glasses. and the Kingfish again. The Kingfish is on fire.
What's the
Kingfish?
There
was a famous joke from the movie Major League about whether or not Jesus Christ could hit a curveball. I was astonished to learn that this might be a legitimate line of inquiry.
So baseball, we didn't talk about baseball.
We didn't talk about baseball, did we? I think
do you like baseball?
I do quite like baseball, yeah.
Have you ever been to a match in America?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
I have, and I found it so boring.
The Red Sox.
Boring. I've been to
see
the
Hammond
Mets.
Organ. It kind of, I love that.
Oh, the right. They have the organ
it
that
kind
plays,
of rises kind of, up and then sinks back down again.
Yeah.
No, I loved it.
I just don't get baseball at all.
Well, partly it was because it was a bit like cricket, but also I loved it because I was already familiar with the cultural grammar.
Right.
So I've seen enough films about it. I know about hot dogs. And I know about the small boys with their dads.
Why do they do that weird thing of all chewing gum and spitting and stuff and all that?
Yeah, see, I'd absolutely do that.
Would you?
Yeah,
what's all that about? That all seems very... The Naked Gun has great fun with that in Naked Gun film.
No, but it's an interesting topic. Again, if anyone can recommend someone who'd be good to talk about baseball, because we don't know enough about the subject.
Or American sports, which is a podcast about the history of American sports.
But baseball, I think, specifically is so tied up with America that it would be...
Yeah. Well, a particular kind of America, though, isn't it? Is that East Coast... kind of nostalgic.
No, it's the national. It's the cricket of America. It's associated with the national stereotype of the country, but it's also slightly lost its primacy.
Yeah.
So, you know, for reasons that would be interesting to explore.
Of course, we have that great weak spot, don't we, on basketball, which we
yes, we did. Which we were it's the only, so when we started, we were very worried that we might get.
Tons of abuse,
get things wrong, all that kind of stuff. The only time we've been monstered was when Dominic said that basketball wasn't an international sport.
Yeah. It's not a good international sport. That's correct.
That's not what you said. Full stop. Good. Well, so is that it?
Yeah. I think that pretty much is it, actually. Well, that's most of that. I mean, that's not even scratching the surface of all the comments. So that's almost embarrassing to pretend that it's it, because it's not.
One person in particular that I would like to thank is James Daniel, who has performed the heroic feat of going through every single episode and drawing up a list of every book that we mention in every single episode, right up to the most recent ones. So that's an incredible resource. And that, I guess, would complement the lists that we're putting up after each episode, suggesting our own recommendations.
Yeah, an amazing feat, because he basically has listed every single book we even mentioned in passing.
Yeah, which means he's listened to every single minute of every episode. So
have you done that, Tom? Have you listened to every minute?
I think I probably have.
Have you? Oh my word. You obviously like the sound of our voices.
Well, I want to learn, Dominic.
Right. You know. So, but we should also say a special thank you. Well, thank you to all of you who are in the club, and a particular thank you to the Athelstans. Who've gone above and beyond. So the Athelstans, we will be in touch very soon with some of the details of the meeting up plans and so on. And I think plans are underway already among our producers for the first Athelstans party, which I think will be... you have to... What we didn't tell you in the small print is you have to come dressed as Athelstan.
Form a shield wall.
Yeah. So that's going to be sometime in 2022, early 2022, isn't
it'll
it?
It'll be a COVID super, permitting. Super spreader event.
Oh, God. Don't say that.
No, I hope not. I hope we'll be allowed to do it.
Yeah, well, we'll do it when we're allowed to do it, of course. And we're really looking forward to that. And we are unbelievably grateful to you for all your encouragement and support. All the questions over the last, 14, 15 months, or all the encouragement on Twitter, all the feedback. because we're sort of slightly, the weird thing about doing a podcast is you are kind of howling into the void, aren't you? And we're just howling at each other, basically. And, you know, you don't really get much of a sense of an audience other than on Twitter and in the Discord and so on. So it's great that so many people have signed up.
Well, I think the Discord really turbocharges what you get on Twitter. It's much more, isn't there? So
yeah,
thank you very much for that. I hope you've enjoyed this. We're back with two new episodes, which you should have had this week. So what's that? That's Superheroes and the Dukes of Burgundy, which is a great mix.
Yeah.
And then next week we have Rachel Morley back with her choice of the top 10 festive churches.
Do you know what, Tom? She's actually coming here in about hour to this house.
That's amazing.
To make my son's birthday cake.
Well, you can tell her.
We employ her as a cake maker.
And you're going 10-pin bowling with her, aren't you?
We are. We're going.
His birthday.
Well, she's not feeling very well, so I don't know whether she might cry off the 10-pin bowling. But we are going 10-pin bowling in Banbury tomorrow. So if anybody fancies travelling back in time, Banbury on Saturday was the place to be.
Well, maybe you'll have run into someone, a time
maybe.
Traveler or something.
Maybe.
It'll be exciting to find one.
Yeah.
And we've got one on, hopefully, all being well, if we can coordinate it, we're going to be going to the scenes of A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
So two festive offerings there. And then after that, the 12 days of Christmas. So lots to look forward to, I hope. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.